This is the Popmatic Podcast for January 6th, 2015.
16.
Yep.
Didn't I, what did I say?
15. Yeah, this is
that
next
check
year.
You wrote me earlier?
Yeah.
This is the Popmatic Podcast for January 6th, 2016. Somebody say, it's a whole new year in their best radio voice.
It's a whole new year in their best radio voice.
We're back. This is the Popmatic Podcast where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are
Bill,
Jeremy,
Mike.
Where's Amanda at?
She got sick of us.
Yep.
She's hanging out with the New Year's baby.
Yep.
I thought we were going to say that she was waiting in line for Star Wars.
All right.
That movie opened four weeks ago.
Yeah. Really, yeah.
Should we cut that joke?
She's waiting in line for Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
All right.
Because that totally sounds like an Amanda movie.
She likes Quentin Tarantino. She does.
Really? Like as a person? Like his movies?
She likes I think that she enjoys his political incorrectness. I hate Quentin Tarantino, and I'm not going to see that movie. Debbie Downer, this intro is ruined! Okay, on this show.
It's about next week's show.
I know.
Oh, man.
You should just cut it and put it for next week.
This is what happens. This is what happens when Amanda isn't here.
The reason it's appropriate that you're talking about next week's show is because this week we're talking about things that we're looking forward to in 2016.
Oh, thank you.
See?
Oh,
crawling from the wreckage.
Thank you for rescuing the intro, Jeremy.
You guys think that my ability to go on tangents and pull threads that don't belong together
your superpowers to recognize fellow tangents.
Yeah.
I bring it back.
See? That's what I do. That's what I do. I'm like, was it Shortcuts? Hey, guys.
First thing we're going to do, we're going to redo this intro. Hey, this is the... And we're back.
Whoa.
And we're back.
We're back from what?
This is the Popmatic Podcast where you can rock out with your library card out. I am doing a stupid radio voice because of you guys.
Hey.
I ask you to. I am Brian.
DJ Brian.
Joining me today are...
DJ Mike.
Monkey Bone. Ill.
And we know that X-Files and...
Washington
Twin Peaks are coming out, and Full House is coming back.
Fuller House, yes.
Oh, man.
Well, you had me until Full House.
Yeah, really.
I think Twin Peaks might be
next year. It might not be till 2017.
In the future, all these shows are coming back, and we know you're excited about them, but we're going to tell you what else you can look forward to in 2016, and I have no idea how I'm going to edit this mess together.
Oh, hi there.
Can you start us off today?
All right.
What are you looking forward to in 2016?
Well, Brian, I have noticed that when I recommend something that I haven't seen / experienced, it tends to be, how shall I put it?
Craptacular when you actually see it?
A cacophony of caca, a discordance of dookie, a symphony of, like The Order 1888, I was quite excited to play. And after an avalanche of bad reviews, I put my pre-order money into something else. Hopefully people on the podcast didn't listen to me. I'm sure they don't listen to me anyway. Spectre was good, but didn't hold a candle to Mad Max Fury Road. Something I had a little excitement for at the beginning of last year and turned out to be amazing. Going to see it in black and white in 2016. So this time, I thought I'd do something totally different. Recommend something that I've actually read and enjoyed that hasn't officially come out yet. Ha ha!
Library magic!
Yeah.
Woo!
Thanks to the ladies of Collection Development being generous with their advanced reading copies, I got a hold of Tim Powers' Medusa's Web, which doesn't officially come out until January 19th. Tim Powers is one of my favoriteest authors. He blends fantasy with history in fun ways, oh boy. In general, his protagonists discover that there's some sort of magic that's going on in the modern world, and every book has a different kind of magic system, which is kind of neat. They don't really, like, intertwine. There's no, like, you know, Marvel-esque fight or anything. And that magic users have produced their own elaborate culture and customs going back, in some books, thousands of years. Historical figures get involved. It's like Mike Catnip. I love that at first you have no idea what's going on, but much like the protagonist, you're like figuring out what's going on, like with the magic system and like with the plot and stuff, and oh, it's the best. Perhaps his most famous novel, The Anubis Gates, is one of the first modern steampunk books involving Egyptian mythology, time travel, and body switching. It also features a bunch of romantic poets like Byron, which is one of like Tim Powers' like, you know, motifs. He really likes the romantic poets. They come up like a bunch. Last Call is another great book. Features a lot of magic based on the tarot, as well as the legend of the Fisher King, who's kind of like a living embodiment of nature that ties in with the legend of the Holy Grail. Turns out that the gangster Bugsy Siegel was the Fisher King of the Western United States. Ah, that's an interesting stuff. And last, you know, of the previous stuff, I'll mention Declare starts out as a straight John le Carré pastiche, complete with, you know, I am the perfect spy because I was groomed from birth to not care about people around me stuff. Which is, you know, I've only read two John le Carré books, and that seems to be a big running motif. But then it veers off into Cold War shenanigans involving Arabian Nights magic and genies and stuff. It is amazing. Like, you know, the Soviet Union has its own patron genie and stuff. So I have read everything his that I could get my hands on, including a cookbook and an incredibly expensive signed hardcover short story. So I was quite excited to see that he'd written a new full-length book that doesn't involve cooking. I usually rely on fan sites for news, but it takes him 5 years to research and write every book. So there usually isn't a lot of news in between. You know, it's like, Tim Power still exists, guys. All right. When's he coming up with a new book?
January 19th!
January 19th!
2016!
Oh, boy. So Medusa's Web is about Scott and Madeline Madden, who are invited back to their ancestral home, Caveat, in Los Angeles after the death of their aunt, Amity. Amity left in the house if they stay a week after the funeral. Their cousins Ariel and Clemaine, who still live in the house, tolerate their intrusion as best they can. Of course, it turns out that Amity and the cousins are addicted to spiders, which are geometrical designs that allow the viewer to travel forward and backward in time in their body or somebody else's. Amity was heavily involved with Hollywood in the 1920s, so Rudolph Valentino and the mysterious deaths of Thomas Ince and William Desmond Taylor all have to do with the plot. The actual, like, mythological figure, Medusa and Perseus, show up, who are actual historical figures. My only gripe with the book, I mean, it's pretty amazing, is like, oh, Tim Powers is back, oh boy. I waited 15 years since I, like, got this excited. My only gripe, though, and it's worth saying this, is that both of the romantic relationships are really hard to believe, even in a book with fourth-dimensional beings and mind control. But overall, I had a good time. Deuce's Web. Check it out, guys. I may buy it in limited edition.
You mean this, like, awesome, like, sci-fi speculative fiction author guy who does all kinds of research and his mind is, like, bursting with ideas, can't do good characterization? Is that what you're saying?
Chefs, shut it. Sport Brian.
There are two kinds of authors in the world. There are authors whose minds are bursting with fourth-dimensional ideas, and there are people who write about upper middle class marriages falling apart. All there is.
Yeah,
that's all there is.
Isn't that
right?
Between.
I mean, you know, and then there's people who, you know, have different lives than those people.
That totally cuts out like all the genres that are popular, marketed to women. So romance. So I've often heard it said that romance authors are better writers than other genre writers because they have to actually do like people as real. Because for the romance to work, you actually like have to know how to write characters, or the romance stinks if the romance doesn't work.
It felt weird for me to say it, though. I mean, I don't know if I care about that sort of thing, but it's like, really? Like, come on. Anyway, we got Jeremy.
Well, speaking of romance, the book I'm most looking forward to this year, 2016, comes out February 9th, and it's called My Father the Pornographer. And this book sprang from, I talked about it in February of 2015, there was an article in the New York Times Magazine called My Dad, the Pornographer. It's written by Chris Offit, and this book comes out in February, and it is sure to warm me during that cold, awful month. Now, by the time it arrives, it'll have been a year since this Offit's essay appeared in the New York Times Magazine, but in the book, we get the full story with a slightly altered title. He went from the more informal dad to the formal father. And this is the story of Chris Offit's. That's a major change, guys. I have a feeling some book editor was like, you know, I think if you put
pornographer. Sounds warmer more.
The contrast of pornographer with father sounds more official somehow. So in the book, we get the story of Chris Offit's father, Andrew J. Offit, who wrote and published more than 400 books. 2 were science fiction and 24 were fantasy, written under his own name. The rest were pornography, using 17 pseudonyms. Let that soak into your bones a little bit. The math is bad there, but that's a lot of damn books.
That's a lot of porn.
There's a lot of porn. Now, the library has but a single Andrew Offutt story in our collection, and it's in the story collection called Thieves' World, Enemies of Fortune. It's
Robert Asprin.
It's part of the Thieves' World Shared Universe anthology series created by Robert Asprin in 1978, which I'm pretty sure Mike's dad would say does not fall under the fleshy umbrella of pornography.
I don't want to picture that.
your dad is just
a fleshy umbrella.
Oh, I'm sorry. Your dad is just confirming that it's not a fleshy umbrella.
Yeah, going into Cronenberg.
G.G. Ballard approves of the flesh umbrella.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. That's my own idea.
Videodrome 2.
Yeah. So fantasy was off its home away from home, sort of, so to speak, even though he didn't write that much fantasy. He wrote some Conan novels, as well as a number of books about another Robert E. Howard character, Cormac MacArthur. This book began after Chris Offutt's father passed away in 2013, and Offutt inherited more than 400 porno novels, all written by his dad. Also, among his father's...
Great.
What an
Merry
inheritance.
Merry Christmas! That's exactly what I wanted.
It was like 1,800 pounds of books, a desk, and a rifle, and like that's it. He also found in his father's belongings a 4,000-page comic book his father made. He traced... using tracing paper, he traced existing comics and then exaggerated the female anatomy and then took those tracings and applied those to another page and then made this story that all took place on a planet full of women. And it was like some pretty dark territory for him, and that he kept it locked away in a vault in his house. Now, the family lived in rural Kentucky. This is Rowan County, to be exact, home of Crystal's alma mater, Morehead State University, and world-renowned county clerk Kim Saron Davis. So the specific details of the elder Offutt's career were mostly unknown to the community at large and even to his children. Offutt's mother served as his father's typist, and she sort of – so they together sort of created a pornographic – cottage industry, which helped put food on the table, put braces on Chris Offutt's teeth, and keep a roof over the family's head. And then my father, the pornographer, explores Offutt sort of getting to know a side of his father, which was mostly unknowable while the man was still alive. I don't know, the whole story, like, it's I'm drawn into it. I like have been like frothing at the mouth for this book for a year. Now, the younger Offutt, of course, is also a writer. This is not his first rodeo. So to speak. And so his critical acclaim has maybe run alongside his father's prolificness. He hasn't written nearly as many books as his dad has. I've read and enjoyed most all of his books, including the novel The Good Brother and the memoir No Heroes. Those are both available here at the library. Now, if you're wondering where to start with him, I would say if this book, My Father the Pornographer, which I'm just going to keep saying the title again and again, if this book sounds like something that you must read, then I would recommend reading No Heroes. It's also a memoir. It tells the story of Offutt returning to Kentucky to teach at Morehead State University and sort of the troubles that arise when you return to your small town after living in a big city. And then threaded throughout the story, he tells the story of his wife's parents' survival of the Holocaust and how they escaped the Holocaust during World War II. And so it's a really sort of a weird balance, and it sort of doesn't make sense in a lot of ways, but at the same time, it's sort of a, I think it's like here's this hardship for me, and then here's what actual hardship is. Sort of. So, and I can appreciate two things that don't go together, but go together well, nonetheless. Like pornography in this podcast. Bill?
I was wondering, like, that has to be a setup.
It was a setup. I just didn't know what the end point was.
Okay. The item I'm looking forward to in 2016 is a book by, big surprise here, folks, Stephen King.
What?
Did I say his name right? Okay.
Stefan Kong.
Stefan Kong.
Okay. I guess you could... Prep show.
Wow. I would watch that.
I totally would.
I guess you could say I'm a Stephen King fan, buff, devotee, enthusiast, fanatic, follower, fiend, freak, junkie, nut, affectionato, practitioner, zealot, card-carrying member of the Stephen King fan club.
Woo!
On June 7th, 2016, Stephen King's latest book, End of Watch, will be released. End of Watch will be the final part of the trilogy featuring retired police detective Bill Hodges. In the final book, Detective Bill Hodges will face his old nemesis, Brady Hartsfield, the Mercedes killer. So on June 7, 2016, is some months away. And by the way, you can put this book on hold now. It's on the order list.
Oh, wow.
You can start to read, however, the first two books, Mr. Mercedes, which introduces Bill Hodges, then read Finders Keepers, the second part. Now, I know a lot of you are saying, and I said this before when I've talked about these books, I don't like scary stories. These books are detective thrillers. They're good old-fashioned page-turners, so I'm looking forward to End of the Watch. But while you're waiting, read the first two books, Mr. Mercedes and Finders Keepers by Stephen King. Brian.
You know, a lot of library patrons I know have picked those up and really enjoyed them because they're like, is this scary? And I'm like, no, they're crime novels. And they're like, no, yeah, you're right. These were really good.
Yeah.
And it's like, they think I made the recommendation. And I'm like, actually, it's Bill. Bill tells me.
But I'll take all the credit.
Like, Bill tells me what crime novels are good. And then I act confident on the desk.
If you do like that, would you like some William Vollman novels?
Library tickets. True story, someone said they wanted something, like, interesting, like, to read, like, fantasy and stuff. I recommended Tim Powers to them. They were like, no, I don't like that. I want something like this. And it was the Anita Blake Vampire Hunter series by Laurel K. Hamilton. And I'm like, oh, you wanted porn. That's what you meant. Oh, I forgot.
So anyway. We have a lot of vampire porn books.
Yes, exactly. You wanted, I'm sorry, this is a library podcast. You wanted vampire erotica. Oh, I'm sorry. That's what you meant. Oh.
Hi-oh.
Yeah. All right. I'm looking forward to any Matthew McConaughey movie that's going to come out in 2016. No, I just...
He might play the Man in Black in the Dark Tower movies.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Ooh, Stephen King connection.
That's Urbis Salwa.
I would like
that.
He's going to be Roland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what I'm really
Randall?
Looking...
Sorry.
You know, I read the first one 20 years ago. I feel good. I remember it began with R.
Brian?
Your fandom is fake. All right.
Bill's a Stephen King fan. I'm just a, creep show fan.
What I'm looking forward to is Maria Bamford's new Netflix show, Lady Dynamite.
Yeah.
Back in the July 24th, 2015 episode, our Regency episode.
Ooh.
I mentioned how much I loved Maria Bamford's comedy album, Ask Me About My New God. I've listened to it so much that I quote it all the time, and my partner's like, what are you talking about? Because she hasn't really listened to it.
I'm doing voices
from the record, and she's like, what are you talking about?
I don't know if this ever happened in your neighborhood, but have you ever seen like a new building open up and you're like, I don't know what that is? Like, it says some vague like Oasis or like Vineyard or Victory Outreach. You're like, what's that? My neighborhood is called The Rock. And there's a guy handing out some flyers. You coming on down to The Rock this weekend? We got live music, food, drinks, stuff for the kids. That sounds like church. No, it's a teen center with community-based health initiatives and a pregnancy counseling. Yeah, it's church. And I would not get mad, but they have genuinely tried to trick me. They want to come to a show? Yeah, where's it at? Cool, new coffee shop. Oh, yeah, what's it called? Crossroads. No! Stop lurking behind your Jimi Hendrix font.
So I was super excited and happy to hear that she was getting her own show. And though I'm very, very excited about Lady Dynamite, I am somewhat curious what it's going to be like. Bamford does a lot of characters, a lot of voices, but I always find her performances very intimate. She's like very close to the microphone, you know? She doesn't like own the stage. A few years back, she actually did a do-it-yourself internet show called The Maria Bamford Show, and it was always just like a close-up or a medium shot of her not moving, just talking in character, mm-hmm. And then there'd be a cut, and she'd be another character, just her being that character, no other actors, you know, no camera movement. So I'm interested, like, what the other show's going to look like or what it's going to be or how these... I'm assuming it's going to have some of her characters in it, like how they're going to come alive.
Did you see the special?
I was going to say, I love that she is willing to take risks and take artistic risks, but sometimes they don't work. And for me, the example would be she once did a stand-up special in her own living room with the only audience being her parents.
Yeah. That sounds so weird.
It is so weird. It is very unusual.
And, you know, the sort of, like, awkward anti-comedy thing, I don't think that's what she was going for. But so, like, but I love her stand-up, but, like, that as a film, like, as a stand-up special that you watch, like, it didn't work for me. So I've heard the show is going to be about her life. So she's a comedian who lives in California. So if her life is like, oh, no, I was supposed to be a guest on this podcast, but my cat had a blockage and I'm going to be late. Go, oh, no, you know, or like she has a friend who's like one notch, like not as pretty as her, but one notch like crazier and more self-destructive than her. Right. Like, oh, their sidekick. What hijinks are we getting to now in our lives as comedians in Los Angeles? I do not care. But if it's about her actual life story, about her like overcoming her mental illness and sort of being successful comedian and then sort of entering into a phase two of her career, then I would be very interested in that because that is what happened to Maria Bamford in real life. She was a successful comic. She had some national TV appearances, which is something that, you know, comics always sort of strive for when you're coming up. And then, you know, she really succumbed to mental illness and ended up living at her parents' house again. And that's what her first internet show, the Maria Bamford Show, was about. It was like her getting back on her feet and doing stand-up again and eventually moving out of her parents' house. And now, you know, a lot of people think that she's this big genius. So, which is awesome. That's good for her. But I read somewhere that there was this story when she was just like really at her lowest point. How she got back to her parents' house was someone that knew her from her previous life before, like found her selling clock radios on the street in Detroit. And then that was like, I guess, like, bottom for her, and then she ended up back at her parents' house, and then, like, she started her life over, and now she's the Maria Bamford that we all know and love. And I want to know if that's true, whether that's just a bit.
I seem to recall a Nerdist podcast interview with her. I think it's the second one where she details her thoughts about suicide and being committed to, not sane asylum, but a better one, mental institution, maybe, like, so.
Yeah, she's really honest about, like, her struggles with mental illness, and she's done, like, formal, like, non-comedy outreach and stuff, you know, about it. But I just want to know if the clock radio story is true, because it sounds it could be one of her bits, right?
Yeah,
you know?
That's
so
true.
So I want to know if that's true. Do you want to do an in-show correction, Jeremy?
You said she succumbed to mental illness, and it's succumbed, right?
I think Jeremy's correct.
Sorry. I just thought if we're talking word salad, I would throw some dressing.
More foreshadowing for the end, gang.
We've talked about this before. Mike's the mumbler, but me and Bill are just like what comes out of our mouths. Is it real or is totally incorrect?
Yeah,
right?
See, you know.
Our own language.
That's right. Everything I have is on the page, but that doesn't mean you can hear it.
is there some sort of superhero component to the show? I feel like it's like she's playing a character on the show, Lady Dynamite. And I mean, Lady Dynamite sounds like a blaxploitation character or something like that. But like, isn't it? I feel like there was some kind of character that she's playing.
I don't know anything other than like some, you know, she's tweeted pictures of some of the actors that have been on the show and they're filming it. But other than that, I don't know anything about it. And I'm the kind of person that I'll probably have an embargo. So, but in the meantime,
I think that's the best.
While you're waiting for Lady Dynamite to come out, you can go back and you can get her album, Ask Me About My New God, which I love. Now, since there's not a lot of us here and we have time to riff, you know, if you wanted to do if you wanted more of a comedian, right, who does a lot of characters on stage, a comedian that we've talked about on the show before is Dan Harmon. And Jeremy has actually talked about his podcast, Harmontown. And I don't like Harmontown. I don't recommend it.
I listened to half an episode and I was like, I'm out.
So here's your typical Harmontown episode. Harmon is introduced by one of his buddies, one of his lackeys. He proceeds to talk about some gross, perverse sexual proclivity that he has. And then he'll invite someone up on stage and do psychotherapy with them and belittle them in front of an audience. So if that's your thing, go for it. Man. I mean, I think it is the thing of the guy that recommended the book called My Father, the Pornographer today.
The first couple of seasons of Community are some of the best shows I've ever seen.
So,
and then I find out he's kind of a terrible person in real life.
So.
I think we have some downtime. Let's dogpile on Jeremy.
But it's also kind of like, yes, low-hanging fruit, but it's also kind of like one of the famous, more notable episodes of Harmontown was called Peak Hitler, where he talked about, imagine a world where you have to go back and kill Hitler because there's like, you suck something out of his brain and it cures cancer or something.
They've run out of oil, and they extract oil, like a tiny amount of oil from Hitler's forehead, like they used to do with whales.
So they go around to like all the infinite realities and kill Hitler, right? To get him at this peak time to get the most oil out of his brain. And sometimes Harmon's proclivities or perversions, if they're funneled into actual stories, they're really good. And you know, he's ran into problems with when working with major networks, like with Community. He was the showrunner on Community.
Yeah.
But a show where he seems to have total creative freedom, all his creative energy and stuff that are funneled into things that are really good and interesting is Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty is amazing.
Rick and Morty is extremely funny. And if you ever listen to the Harmontown podcast, it is directly his obsessions and life, like filtered into actual stories instead of him just telling you about what he's looking at out the on the internet late at night. And
playing Minecraft
all the time. If you haven't watched Rick and Morty, it's basically, you know, this is a typical middle class, you know, TV family. And the grandpa comes back, but the grandpa is a mad scientist with a gun that lets him, with a portal gun, basically, sort of like from the video game Portal, and lets him, like, teleport through different universes. And the grandpa is kind of like a selfish jerk, Dan Harmon. And
I got, like, a Back to the Future, like,
it's like Doc Brown.
Doc Brown. Yeah, but like a Marty drunk vibe, except Marty's really dumb. And
Well, like, Doc Brown, but, like, maybe, like, Doc Brown and Kramer.
Yeah. Drunk.
Yeah, drunk. Like, mixed together.
Burping all the time.
Mixed
all
together.
I've only watched, like, 4 episodes. I was like, man, he burps a lot.
He burps a lot.
Rick, I don't like glowing rocks in the kitchen trash.
Well, I don't like your unemployed jeans and my grandchildren, Jerry. But life is made of little concessions.
You're going to land on your feet, Jer. Some company out there is going to think they're lucky stars they hired my little brother.
Who the f*** are you?
My goofy brother, Steve? He's been living here almost a year now. Are you losing your mind?
Hey, someone's been spending too much time around glowing rocks, am I right?
Everybody just relax for a second. There's no such thing as an Uncle Steve. That is an alien parasite.
But I've known him my whole life.
No, you haven't, Jerry. These telepathic little bastards, they embed themselves in memories, and then they use those to multiply and spread out and take over planets. It's disgusting.
Steve wasn't real?
He's a real piece of ish. This is a big one. Somebody probably tracked it in last week on the bottom of their shoe or on a piece of alien fruit.
Someone?
Get off the high road, Summer. We all got pink eye because you won't stop texting on the toilet.
But so one of the sort of the crazy anything goes kind of storytelling that you kind of get on the Harmontown podcast are basically animated in Rick and Morty with a story structure, with characters. And the other thing they do, speaking of Doc Brown, it's kind of interesting.
You mean Doc Brown?
Yeah.
You're thinking of the ale that you like.
So there's all these, since this is a just like nerds around the table, one of the things that they do in Rick and Morty, too, is basically like postmodern sci-fi pop culture blender, basically.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So he's totally willing to be self referential and reference other things in pop culture and to recycle elements of other science fiction stories.
I love it the first episode that it turns out that Freddy Krueger is the king of Inception.
That's the best ever. Yeah.
It's like, of course.
That episode is totally fantastic. So we have the first season of Rick and Morty on DVD. While you're waiting for Dan Harmon to succumb to substance abuse. No, that's not fair. I feel so bad.
Wow.
Because I talk about how inspiring Maria Bamford is. I shouldn't wish bad things this other person who has problems.
He just got divorced, too, man.
I know.
Kick him while he's
really?
Down.
Oh, yeah.
He was married for like 14 months.
Yeah, I was going to say, they dated for a long time. But
he wasn't married, for long.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Rick and Morty season 1 on DVD. Check it out.
Hey guys.
Mate, what do we do? I took a wife fancy.
Well, maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Bill?
Well, we have this, and it's tickling my fancy. It's a PBS documentary called, in their own words, Jim Henson. It's a history of Jim Henson from where he was born, his quick rise to fame, and there's no downfall. He was always striving to do more. There is a problem with this documentary, however. It's when Jim Henson dies way too young. And so it's a fascinating documentary, a man who you wish you could have known personally. Jeremy?
Yeah, he's not the greatest guy ever.
I was glad to put 2015 behind me. It wasn't a bad year necessarily. It was just kind of disappointing to me.
My father, the pornographer, never came out.
That's right.
What a chip. Yeah, foaming at the mouth for different reasons.
What a tease. Pornography. So in the spirit of putting years behind me, I don't know. I read Magnus Robot Fighter 4000 AD Volume 1.
Great transition, man.
Thanks, bruh. It's the first seven issues of the classic comic Magnus Robot Fighter 4000 AD by Russ Manning. So, in the wake of a disappointing sort of year, these tales of a man wearing a skirt-like tunic and punching robots in their mechanical faces was good for me. Also, I am now far enough into Daredevil, the TV show, to say that I really like it.
Yeah.
I really like the episode Stick.
Yes.
That was really cool. Yeah, yeah. It was very cool.
It's exciting and nerdgasming.
Yeah, and like, I don't even miss the fact that he's not wearing his costume, and I'm like eight episodes into, was it 13 or 10?
Yes, 13.
13. So there's I'm eight episodes into 13, and like he's still not wearing his costume, and he's wearing the costume that he wore in this like TV movie, this Hulk TV movie in 1988 or something. That's kind of lame, but it's not lame. It's like it's very practical. It makes sense, and like it feels like it's not like teasing out like here comes his costume, here it comes.
It's the greatest live action superhero show ever made.
Yeah, it is pretty great. It's like pulpy and like it.
It even has like themes and stuff. Like you know, maybe the Kingpin has like you know motives and such. You know,
the only thing that I don't like, and it's not really that much of a complaint. There's been a couple of times where I thought like the gore level was maybe a little too much. You know, it doesn't bother me, but like I do believe that you know like
too much gore.
Well, there's a headless.
And you're kicked off the podcast.
When can you have too much gore?
Well, it's not The Walking Dead is my point. You know what I mean? Like every episode of The Walking Dead. Every episode of The Walking Dead, there's a scene where like someone puts their fist and a head that mashes like potatoes or whatever. And
it's so cool too.
It's cool because there's zombies, but like you know, there's like a headless.
Gore is the only good thing about Walking Dead.
There's a headless corpse on a table in one episode, and said headless corpse is being decapitated by a door earlier in a previous episode.
All right, do you guys need to go, or should I start?
2015. This would have been an interesting podcast. I don't watch The Walking Dead. I don't watch Quentin Tarantino. I don't watch Daredevil because the gore. Gore is, I don't get it. Anyway, Mike, what's tickling your fancy?
Would you vote for Nader?
Damn hippies.
Sorry. I'm glad you laughed. You guys laughed. Good job, Jeremy. Mike?
Uh-oh. So there used to be a show called Brimstone about a cop named Ezekiel Stone who escaped hell to track down bad guys for Satan. It was a lot of fun, but of course, since I liked it, it only lasted one season. He was let out of hell after being dead for 15 years. So there's some kooky fish out of water shenanigans. One episode had a recurring gag where Stone had a craving for a candy bar that only lasted about 6 months in the early 80s. I had a moment like that a few years ago where I had a craving for Apple Newtons, which not only don't exist, but haven't existed for a long time. I get blank looks from people. You mean fig, right? No, damn it, Apple. Even the internet's like, I guess this is a thing? Shrug? Apple Newtons! This barely contained craving and or rage never left until last week when I discovered at the grocery store Nature's Bakery whole wheat apple cinnamon bars in the breakfast bar aisle. Oh man, did I miss that flavor. Oh, wow. Fig is good, apple is better, and hippies in the audience may be pleased to know that it's made of wheat, so I guess it's healthy.
Brimstone Day.
Wow.
I like that. That's a good tie-in. I think the foodie trend now is like wheat is bad though.
Yeah, paleo diet, bro.
Oh no!
Paleo
diet. Oh no! Wheat is bad.
You can eat just like raw meat and like dirt.
corrections.
I have corrections.
Tell us your corrections,
do
Michael.
It.
Oh, well, I actually wrote notes for corrections while listening to last week's podcast, so good times. So here's what I thought I had said, and it came out all garbled.
Did you say R garbled?
Clark Gable. Is that
John Arbuckle.
5 stars out of 5 movies are pretty rare for me. I don't know what weird gibber sentence I said.
Yeah, I didn't hear that either.
400 times.
Let's see. I may have been too mean to Brian in the last episode. He actually did get excited at one point, or at least pretended to be. Either way, it was magical. And I realized almost exactly after I said it that I don't think I've ever actually complained about talkiness in action movies on the podcast. This podcast is all about smiles and hugs about pop culture. And let's just say that off pod, Mike is a grumpy grump who doesn't dig everything. Note that I watch 200 to 300 movies a year, and only one or two I find amazingly amazing. Anything else?
No.
I had all these, there were so many jokes that all the typewriter keys like jammed up in my head at once.
So, this happened to me.
Yeah. Other corrections. The clip at the end was Nancy Myers talking about how she could not get the intern made because there were so many superhero movies that were popular when she first completed the script. That was Amanda's favorite movie last year. I thought that was kind of an appropriate clip because maybe Amanda feels that way when you guys are talking about comic books, trying to get a word in edgewise. But Amanda isn't here today to appreciate that correction. But
were you aware of What If number 3 that time? The Watcher was not wearing shorts?
Amanda's standing in line for Star Wars, which happened 3 weeks ago.
Now that is science fiction.
Her husband might be doing that, and she might went along if he paid her enough money.
She liked that Pixels movie. That has to qualify as science fiction, right?
When I first saw the trailer for that movie, I was like, they're making a Minecraft movie already? And then I saw the end of the trailer. All right, so other corrections. Should I mention Bill's word salad? Or should we just let that go?
You know, I noticed him say weird stuff, but I don't want to be mean to poor Bill, so.
What now? If it's you, that Tom O'Gleason, that actor.
You said Sicario.
You said like Sicario a lot.
Yeah, which one is it?
It's Sicario.
Sicario.
It's Sicario.
But then you did say Sirocco, I think, at the end,
no.
Right? No.
I didn't notice that.
I think later on you said Sirocco, I think, but.
It stars Emily Blunt. Just look for that one. It's got ass. So.
It's got ass? Okay.
It's got ass, is that what you said?
Yeah, yep. Please don't cut that.
We've got the book, too.
We do have the book. I cataloged it recently.
Yeah.
It's a great film.
Yeah, that's what's important.
I've been meaning to watch it.
When you were talking about Ex Machina, you introduced the one character as Cable, and then later you referred to him as Caleb, and Caleb was the name of his character. It was the...
Cable? I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, now that you mentioned Cable coming up, and I was mid-90s X-Men character?
The character of Caleb was played by... Domhnall Gleeson, and you said Tom Hall Gleeson.
Now, I went on the internet.
Who'd have thunk it? We were both wrong. Here is Mr. Gleeson to tell us the correct pronunciation of his name.
I've been called most things. Domhnall is quite a big one. Domhnall, if you're Alejandro Iñárritu. There was an article last week that said the rapid rise of downhill Gleason, which I found kind of interesting that my agent sent me. But it's Donal is how I pronounce my name, which is like tonal but with a D instead of a T, and the M is just there to confuse Americans.
You can say Brendan Gleason's son.
Yeah, that's good.
I can say his name.
Mr. Gleason's name is Irish.
M's and N's don't belong side by side.
So,
and he's in the new Star Wars movie.
He is. He's in a lot of stuff. He's a hot actor right now.
As is Oscar Isaac.
And
as
he was in Brooklyn, too.
Oh, cool.
He was. And Oscar Isaac was amazing in Ex Machina, too. That's it. That's all the corrections for now.
Oh.
For more information about grammar Nazis, you can go to www.library.nashville.org. Org, and our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week, Westerns, I think, is what we decided.
Hi, hi, hi.
Wah, wah, wah. Put up your dukes. Yeah, finally, an episode for Mike. Unlike all those other episodes from Mike last year.
Hey, Drive Time Bass, what's going on in here? It's Twitter and the Muppet
Drive Time Radio.
Oh, but I've done some other unforgivable, unspeakable thing. Google it. There's 7 billion of us. Somebody has done exactly what you have done and is currently on a book tour. You're never alone!